Organización para la Seguridad y Cooperación en Europa, OSCE. El vicecanciller Alexander Grusko, representante de la parte rusa, junto al viceministro de Defensa Alexander Formín, detalló que analizaron como puntos claves la no expansión de la OTAN hacia el este, el no despliegue de armas ofensivas cerca del territorio ruso y el regreso de la infraestructura militar en Europa a la configuración de 1997, cuando el acta básica ruso-OTAN fue firmada al más alto nivel. Asimismo, Grusko calificó el encuentro informal, pues Moscú no tiene ningún representante diplomático ante la organización militar después de que ésta revocara la acreditación de los delegados rusos en octubre de 2021. Los 30 países miembros de la Alianza Atlántica reafirmaron su compromiso con un enfoque de doble vía de diálogo y disuasión y aseguraron estar abiertos a un diálogo significativo y diplomático. Por su parte, el secretario general de la OTAN, Jens Stoltenberg, indicó que entre el bloque transatlántico y Moscú hay diferencias significativas acerca de las cuestiones de la situación en Ucrania y la seguridad en Europa, que no serán fáciles de superar. Asimismo, la subsecretaria de Estado Wendy Sherman, quien presidió la delegación estadounidense, señaló que las propuestas de seguridad de Moscú son algo inaceptables para Estados Unidos, pues no permitirán que nadie termine la política de puertas abiertas de la OTAN. Como parte del intercambio, los representantes de Rusia y la OTAN reafirmaron la disposición de seguir dialogando. No obstante, no se llegaron a acuerdos concretos.
Este 11 de enero, dos incansables luchadores sociales, Clyde Howard Belcourt y Alicia Krapko, partieron para reunirse con sus ancestros. Belcourt era también conocido por su nombre Ojibwe, Nigon Wiwei Widun, que significa el trueno antes de la tormenta. Él era un organizador sobre los derechos civiles y cofundador del movimiento indígena americano, junto con Dennis Banks, Eddie Benton Banai y su hermano Vernon Belcourt. Clyde Belcourt murió de cáncer a los 85 años y deja de este lado a su esposa Peggy y sus cuatro hijos. Belcourt era el último sobreviviente del grupo, cofundador del movimiento indígena americano. La argentina Alicia Krapko, de 69 años, también partió este 11 de enero para reunirse con sus ancestros después de luchar intensamente contra una cruel enfermedad. Su condición nunca fue un obstáculo para su trabajo solidario con Cuba y Venezuela. La periodista exiliada en México primero y luego en Estados Unidos dejó su patria argentina durante la dictadura militar, que desapareció como 30.000 personas. Durante su vida en el exilio trabajó incansablemente contra el embargo de Estados Unidos a Cuba, fue laboriosa en el movimiento por la libertad de los cinco cubanos y mantuvo un alto perfil solidario con el pueblo venezolano. Alicia Krapko deja de este lado a su compañero Bill Hartwell y sus tres hijos, Gabriela, Aileen y Juanito. Hasta siempre, colega Alicia. Hasta siempre, Ni Gon Wi Wei Widon, Clyde Howard Belcourt. Llegamos al final de esta edición del Informativo Pacífica. Nuestro más profundo agradecimiento a todos los medios y personas que hicieron posible este programa. A nombre de Norma Martínez, se despide tu amigo de siempre, Fernando Velázquez. Gracias por acompañarnos.
Este y otros programas del Informativo Pacífica pueden ser escuchados o descargados en iPod o en forma tradicional en www.kpfk.org en los archivos de audio.
Told me, you know, we'll give you a day, we'll give you a week, however long it takes for you to accept our help to be healed and to become a child of God and denounce being gay.
Honoring the memory of Dr. Anonymous, coming up on the Rainbow Minute.
I got 3/4 of the way through several times and was like, well, I have no idea how this would end, so I have to start over. But one thing I know is I can't end a story without hope.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappell. Nicaragua's NGO Purge targets its oldest queer group. Gay Taiwanese movie sings out a universal love song and upending the artistic process with Amanda Kayback. All that and more this week because you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm Joe Bainline.
And I'm John Dyer V.
With NewsWrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending August 28, 2021. The government of Nicaragua is aiming to shut down the country's oldest LGBTQ advocacy group. The Interior Ministry has asked the National Assembly.
And up next, it's the January 13th, 2022 edition of Bathrob Spears Broadsides. That's going to be, what are we going to be doing? Well, it looks like we're going to check out the latest shitty council meeting and the new homeless czar or homeless resources officer. I'm not quite sure of his title, but his name is Larry Imwald, and his, he wrote a letter evicting Food Not Bombs from the Lot 27. It has now moved to, I guess it's 440. Not sure the exact address, but it's the lot next to the old university copy at Cathcart and Front Street, if you're familiar with the downtown area. In any case, more of that, and hopefully more illuminating information as well. So listen in.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's kick off with the city manager's report. At the city council on the, I guess it was on the 11th, Tuesday. Here it is. I'm going to be interrupting with various commentary and maybe even a little music because it's longer than usual. And the city manager's report is often the only place where you get more information about what the supposed intentions of the homelessness czar of the moment, whether it's Susie O'Hara, who's now, of course, under a cloud, is suing the city for workplace harassment, I believe. That's a whole other story, which I don't have a lot of information other than her lawyer's claims, which she presented, or he presented, or they presented at the last city council meeting. Or Lee Butler, or Larry Imwald, or whoever is punting for the city at this point, just to cover its latest attempt to justify the attempt to remove homeless people from public spaces, which is the primary objective. However humanitarian they claim their motives are, is it cynical? Is it realistic? Who knows? About my perspective, that's what it is. Now, the recording is not the best, but it is, I think, audible, and so let's jump into it.
Just a second of a minute. you can record me, but I'm going to move all this stuff.
Okay, so we're on the line with Keith McHenry, who has just apparently reported in about unfortunate doings, or maybe interesting doings, at the perhaps the Food Not Bombs meal spot, the new meal spot, or is it Depot Park? I'm not sure.
You know, Depot Park, you know, they're kicking all the people out of Depot Park and sending them to back to the benchland. Great. Okay, cool. And I'm going to stand by my car and let these people do their job. So,
where are you now, Keith?
I'm at the water station thing, or the Pure Water, getting water and equipment for the, you know, caps, basically, that have been lost in the battle for feeding the hungry. So
now
you
received word from Greg, who actually spoke to us at the Huff meeting.
No,
about...
I was standing right there putting up flyers at Depot Park to let people know that the meal got moved to Cathcart and Front Street.
Mm-hmm.
And and Greg got out of a tent, said hi, and then Lieutenant Morrissey came up and said, oh, yeah, well, Keith, we're going to notify everyone that they have to leave today.
Today? I thought it was leave. Monday.
They're gonna leave. They were notifying everyone today that they got to leave this week to go to back to...
the benchlands.
Benchlands, yeah.
Right.
He said, no, benchlands. You know, Greg said, where are we going? And he said, to the benchlands. He goes, is that the only place? Yes, it's the only place. So that's what's happening there.
How many people would you estimate are at Depot Park? Any sense of that?
Oh, God, yeah, it could be 50 people. It was pretty intense.
Mm-hmm. Look pretty.
Yeah, they pretty moved in there too. Like all kinds of, you know, stuff. Pretty interesting.
Looked pretty crowded. A lot of tents.
Yeah, right up next to each other. Yeah, the fire marshal should have been in there. Right away, but weren't there. And yeah, it's like having that. Keep moving people around and this psycho drama. I think we are really getting close to where they put everybody in the navigation center. Thank you so much for your help, man. Bye-bye. We'll see you in a bit.
So that's the latest. Anything?
Oh, yeah, I got to give you money probably, right? Cool. So, yeah, so that's the way that went. It's pretty hardcore.
You'll be setting up a meal, of course. We're talking to you at about... well, I guess it's a little before 3, or the meal is currently being served at the new site, right?
Yes, yes, been going really, really well.
And this is it's visible from the street on a privately owned lot that is.
That's our understanding. Yeah.
The other half of it is leased by the city, but this one's the one that you would park at if you went to the dance center or the university copy business.
That's correct. Cool. Thanks, man.
Uh-huh. And
it's Food Not Bombs.
Have people found their way there, given the fact that there was such an abrupt move?
Okay, cool, beautiful. Yeah. And I'll pay, yeah, oh, man, you've given us great credit for a long time. So, anyway, the, yeah, you know, we've been flyering all around town, and I run, you know, we've done the Benchlands area, we've done where we were serving. We've been all downtown over the library, you know, and I've run into a ton of people.
And because this is a privately owned lot, the city has no power to evict you at this time? Is that...
That's our understanding. Thank you so much.
So people can expect that... of course, they might decide you are a health hazard. You know, that is a possibility, Keith.
Well, of course, there's 669 days of feeding people and being essentially the food and water for town. People live outside. I'm not too worried about that. Plus, the Environmental Health Department so far has been siding with us.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that, you know. We're not going
to
have any.
Now, is the water you're getting designed to go to the meal, to go to the benchlands, to go to the, I don't know, Hills Trail?
Well, the water I've got right now is mostly going to go to the meal, but we also have a whole benchlands operation, too. But, but the water, what I have right now is for the meal.
Is Food Not Bombs still supplying food to the benchlands? Like I think Greg told us there was,
yeah.
It was more of a catch-as-catch-can sort of thing.
Yeah, we've been taking food to the meal. And, you know, we can get as much food as possible. Here, one second. I'm going to have to end the interview right now and take the next emergency phone call. So, there you go. Bye-bye.
I guess what we heard from Greg at the Huff meeting just earlier this afternoon was that the Benchlands has been severely depopulated. There are about maybe 50 people left, something like that. I think we just lost Keith. So we can try to get back to him later. But so things are in motion. And one thing we did here at the Huff meeting, I did hear, was that Monday was the deadline for people in Depot Park having to leave, presumably being told to go to the Benchlands, sort of currently a dumping ground. Although I'd also heard that Greg said, and this is a resident of the Benchlands, that they have resumed phone charging services there, although they've removed some of the porta potties, and they're also doing some clearing with the bulldozer, which I suppose is nice aesthetically. Maybe it's helpful. I'm not sure if it's helpful to those who are living there, or is it simply designed to encourage them to leave before the bulldozer gets them? I don't have a real clear sense of that, but I've got my ear to the ground. If anybody has anything they want to report regarding this encampment or any others in Santa Cruz, do give me a call on the Huff line at 831-423-HUFF, which is 4833. That's 831-423-4833, and we'll all know more. And we now shift to the city manager's report. That's the new city manager, Matt Huffaker, who turns things over to his homeless resource officer, or whatever he's called, whose name is Larry Imwall. And here he is, and this is the text of what he had to say at that city council meeting 2 days ago.
Good afternoon, Mayor and Council members. Larry Wally, Homelessness Response Manager. As Matt mentioned, I have some updates on recent activity related to homelessness response. First item I want to share with you all is progress at the 1220 River Street Transitional Community Camp. I want to let you know that we opened this camp last week. Thursday and Friday are when we moved the first campers into this site. We continued those efforts over the weekend and continue this week. My update earlier today is that we have 18 people to camp presently. There's another 5 or 6 that are in the enrollment process, and we expect that camp to be at full capacity, which is about 30 people. By the end of next week. And if you recall that this is a different kind of camp model than we have done in the past.
And before we hear all the bells, whistles, and frills, and somewhat a few changes which have to be noted, note how small this camp is, let's say, compared to the Depot Park that is being depopulated, which has 50 tents. Well, Keith estimated 50 tents. Maybe between 40 and 50 tents would be my guess. It would look pretty crowded. I walked through it a week and a half, 2 weeks ago maybe, and it's grown since then. At least that was my cursory view from as I passed by. And some of the tents are larger, most are small, but could have up to 1 or 2 people. It's not going to obviously hold most people, and indeed there's a reason they're being directed to the Benchlands, because only the creme de la creme are being groomed to go to the 1220 River Street area, which is this sort of gravelly barbed wire enclosed encampment that served as a kind of a pretext for eliminating all other homeless encampments throughout the city, most notably the Ross Camp encampment in, I guess it was 2019. 2019. And so it's a token camp. It does not actually have much to do with meeting the real needs or allowing others, private agencies, for instance, meet the real needs of folks. It's the pretext that allows authorities to enforce elimination of visible encampments and of visible homeless people sleeping at night or sleeping during the day. And there's an elaborate and expansive and rather grueling camping ban. 6.36, as it was before, has just been doctored to enable it to conform to the Martin versus Boise decision, at least superficially, but in fact denying the spirit of that decision, which is thou shalt not ticket homeless people unless one has shelter for all the homeless people. That is, so you can't simply pull out a bed out of your hat and say, okay, so now we can start ticketing you unless you immediately go to this bed or this cot on the floor or this mat, whatever. So, let's hear more.
We're really focused on creating community. There are requirements around case management, developing individualized service plans, and making progress towards goals to get connected to more permanent and stable housing.
And, of course, this is the endless mythology that is rolled out to capture more state and federal homelessness funding, is to claim that you are finding people housing when, in fact, the large majority of homeless people have no hope of that kind of housing at the present time, and there's no provision being made for them, as, for example, in the Benchlands at the moment, with the demolition of Depot Park, which some people have said is not as bad, although somewhat crammed and cramped, as conditions were for some in the Benchlands. And it seems like it's, again, it's the attempt to have a story for the news media and the middle class and the courts that the city can propound, particularly since the last time they tried to pull the demolition of encampments in San Lorenzo Park about a year ago, they were confronted with both community outrage and a legal injunction. So they want to avoid that one this time if they can, though they don't talk about that, of course.
The next item I wanted to update you all on is the Salvation Army's program for a 24/7 75-bed shelter up at the Armory. The council authorized the contract at the December 14th council meeting. This contract is currently in legal review by the Salvation Army's regional administration, and staff is working with them to start this program as soon as possible. As you all know, this is one of the key pieces of our efforts to expand shelter capacity in the city. Also related to that action at the December 14th meeting.
Before we hear about what's related, notice the vagueness of this somewhat larger shelter option that is being provided. People are not being directed up there at the moment from, let's say, the Depot Park. Rather, they're being told to go back to the Benchlands. And, of course, people are being, of course, cleared away from other encampments, such as Lot 27, which is the former Food Not Bombs meal site, where there were also a dozen or so tents that were forced to move. The point being that they were not really given another place to go. I guess the Benchlands was told that they could try to, sop their way through the soggy Benchlands, which I guess may be drying out. I haven't been to the Benchlands in the last few days. And people, I guess, are still living there. I didn't hear from Greg any complaints about having to sort of make your way through a swampy area, nor that there was some mention of their concern about potential flooding again and how the inadequate effects of the inadequate response of the city to the flooding that happened last time, when the answer was when they tried to move to the higher ground in the park. That's the area for people to walk their dogs and take children where there is no way, there's no need to see these homeless people. And of course, that kind of mentality is alive and well in Santa Cruz and in power in the city council. The point that I was making, though, that the area up at the the armory run by the Salvation Army, and I don't know what kind of a record, a track record the Salvation Army has. I think it may have gotten better. It was pretty bad some years ago, but I don't know. I don't have a lot of sense of how they did during the COVID crisis. I think the Union of the Homeless did express a lot of concerns about group congregate shelters, congregate indoor shelters. And though I think generally homeless people survived pretty well in those shelters as it turned out, although in some cities they did not. And I guess in Watsonville there was some more recently, some kind of an outbreak somewhere. I don't have the details on that one. And I'm not clear about that, so I don't want to wander too far on that path. But the small number of people being considered as given real shelter resources for is, what, 105 or something if you add the 1220 River and the Salvation Army's operation up at the Armory. And that's, what, less than a tenth of the homeless people who are unsheltered in Santa Cruz. So that's going to be the, I think 150 people was the kickoff for resuming enforcement of people, again, and who are in other encampments elsewhere. Although, I guess the Benchlands has been designated, or was a few months ago, as a sanctioned campground, but they were going to try to depopulate it as quickly as possible. And that you're going to hear, I think, Larry Imwalla talk about that, and I hope I'm getting his name right, but I think you know who I'm talking about. Or if you don't, he's the guy who's in charge of homeless resources here in Santa Cruz now.
There was a question about Salvation Army's participation in the state unemployment insurance program. We worked with the state attorney's office on a legal analysis and determined that they are under that under state law exempt due to their nature as a religious organization.
That doesn't sound too promising for the people who are working in that program, but let's hear more.
Our hope is to get that program up and running by early February. So that's how we're, that's our effort with Salvation Army, to start that as soon as possible. The next update is related to the encampment at Lot 27. Creek Water District, their Pure Water Soquel construction project that is making its way, is now necessitating the closure and securing of that lot for the construction work to begin. The timeline provided the city was to be able to have that lot cleared and secured for the construction contractor by January 14th. That's this Friday. Based off of that timeline, on Friday last week, the city provided notice to everyone camped in and around the lot that they would need to leave the area by 2 p.m. today.
And now that means they gave them 3 days notice to move everything. It seems to me that the city likely knew about this project more than 3 days in advance. And therefore, it seems that they're treating the folks who are providing lots of services to homeless people on the regular basis that the city has declined to do, i.e. meals between 12 and 4 o'clock every day for over 600 days, and I believe that's an accurate assessment, pretty shabbily indeed. So it naturally provoked some outrage and response and resistance, and I will be playing some of that. Actually, it happened the same day when the Food Not Bombs folks got together and their supporters in the community and simply ringed the lot or blocked the entrances to the lot and said, you're not going to remove folks during the meal today in spite of your so-called 2 o'clock deadline. And there was more. You'll hear how Larry Imwalla said that he had tried to communicate with Keith McHenry And McHenry, on the other hand, said he'd written and sent me letters that he had sent to Larry Imwell asking to, that he's pointing out he's working it out, and communicating directly with the water district to try to find a, another place. And they're happy to try to cooperate, but not to, to be rushed out without having an opportunity to be able to reasonably move all their gear so they can continue to serve people and also notify people about the new location. You heard Keith talking about he was doing flyering even today to advise people at the Depot Park where the Food Not Bombs meal was. But that it didn't seem to faze Imwell, who just... he denied that he had any communication with McHenry other than simply trying to reach him, but been failing to reach him, and McHenry had refused to respond, and that, frankly, I don't believe Imwell. I mean, I know I'm a friend of Keith McHenry's, so that does bias me, but I think McHenry has been pretty open with me about his communications with the city in the past and their communications with him, and he has attempted to communicate, and Imwell has not responded to his communications. So there is an integrity issue here to start with and a power problem, I think, at the very beginning, which I think has really pissed off McHenry, and perhaps properly so.
People that were camping at the site were provided contact information from city outreach staff, and if they were interested in a spot that's available at the Benchlands, which is the space we let people know is available. So we've had the city outreach staff there letting them know that. They've been on site at the Benchlands both yesterday and today from 10 to 1 p.m. for anybody that's interested. The contact information for our staff is provided on the notice that was provided to folks at Lot 27.
Now, I suppose this is a better deal than the kind of, here's a card, you can contact a potential social worker, and here's are the wonderful resources that the city has for you, which lead you to phone services that don't answer, people who talk about services that are full, and waiting lists. So, because there is actually, although not the best spots, there are the Benchlands has been depopulated because of the flood conditions there. And it has not been particularly, I am not aware there's been a lot of city assistance to the Benchlands area. I'm removing people from the Benchlands first to a parking lot and then to Depot Park, yes. First to the parking garage across the way on River Street and then to Depot Park. But it essentially is go here, go there, go back there. Again, the only place that is legitimate for people to go is a place that is not terribly healthy place. We heard some testimony today at the Huff meeting that there was some concern about illness and bad conditions as far as unsanitary conditions there, but with the removal of porta potties and other things. Although there was the positive notice of the restoration of, as I think I may have mentioned before, phone connectivity or phone charging services. So let's hear more from Larry, the homelessness master.
In addition, we've been able to assist two people from Lot 27 have moved into the transitional community camp at 1220 River. And then today, outreach staff were able to arrange for two more people to obtain spots at the county shelter up at the Armory.
Now, that is specific, although it's very limited, and so that's good in contrast to the very vague statements made by former homeless Zarina Susie O'Hara and then Lee Butler. Still, that's not much considering the number of people who are being displaced by all this stuff and the disregard for the people who are really providing immediate on-the-scene assistance there, like McHenry.
We also simultaneously provided notice to Food Not Bombs, which operates on that location and has placed two storage containers on that site. So they were noticed and given the same timeline of the need to remove their property from that location by 2 p.m. today as well.
Again, the question is, why give them only 3-day notice when you must have had a considerably longer period of time?
And city staff is working with PD on any kind of enforcement that might be needed with respect to those vacation notices. The next planned closure...
And again, the staff is working with PD, meaning we're getting ready to roll these folks out whether they like it or not. That's his sort of gentle way of talking about that. Or perhaps not so gentle way.
Of an encampment is the Depot Park evacuation encampment that was established after the flooding of the low-lying areas around the San Lorenzo River back in December. As we noted at that time, that this was intended to be a temporary encampment that we plan to close by the middle of January. So the plan is to close that encampment next week. We'll be noticing the campers at the end of this week. And with this camp, we'll be supporting relocation of those who are interested in moving back to the benchlands, which is where most people who are residing at Depot Park right now were before the flood.
And let's just take a brief musical break, and you can have a little relief from me and Larry for the moment. Then this song is called Pirate Radio Song, and it's... Perhaps near and dear to some Santa Cruzans, because it's about Free Radio Santa Cruz that was raided by the FCC, Rovix writes, and shut down on September 29, 2004. It would reopen soon afterward. Around that time, this sort of thing was happening all over the U.S. One of the ways that the grassroots scene that was called by many names included the anti-capitalist movement sought to challenge the ownership of the radio airwaves and to spread important news, information, ideas, and music. At the time involved setting up a lot of pirate radio stations all over the country. The Federal Communications Commission has armed enforcers of the law, who come to shut down such operations, confiscating transmitters and other equipment and never giving it back.
This is how it started. It's not hard to understand. From coast to coast, they're lying at a CEO's command. From nationalist public radio, CNN and NBC, Big Brother spewing propaganda from the disinformation ministry. They say the economy is booming. We hear the homeless beggars cry. They say we help poor countries. We see bombs falling from the skies. Reality doesn't exist, they're trying to say. But some of us decided there is another way. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. We will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. Someone got a transmitter, started up a station. Then the idea spread right across the nation. Like the land and water, the air must be free. So let us shout together, fuck the FCC. Seize the airwaves, seize the time. 'Cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. We will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. And we'll do it all together in a grassroots style, tearing down the fences throughout this whole square mile. It's the new town meeting, it's the way the news should be. The rulers call it chaos, we say it's democracy. So when you turn on the radio and you've had it with this shit, from 88 to 107 makes you wanna have a fit. When you listen to the music and it's all the same pop song, start up a pirate station, cause that's where you belong. Seize the airwaves, seize the time, cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. Seize the airwaves, seize the time, cause lying to the people is the real crime. When it's all owned by corporations and theirs is the only word, we will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard. We will seize the airwaves, speak freely and be heard.
And who knows, one of these days, free radio on the net might actually get back on the airwaves. Until then, you have a few lone broadcasters. A few of us here at Free Radio do continue to kind of keep the ghost of Free Radio going. But right now, it's pretty much an echo of what was, although I try to keep it somewhat current, as you notice if you listen to my twice-weekly shows and other broadcasters, or netcasters, I should say, do the same. It could be that this is really the end of the era for free radio. We do need, as we've been saying for several years now, a transmitter site. And in the past, people have called in and contacted us and offered their second-story building or trees on their lot or so forth. And eventually, the FCC often does complain, but no one has ever been fined for doing that here in Santa Cruz. And we've moved many times. But in the last few years, we have not been, no one's been biting at our hook, so to speak. We also look, of course, for a studio where we can rent relatively low cost, $300 a month for a 10 by 10 space. And we haven't been able to secure that either. Of course, that's a little more understandable since the price of everything real estate-ish is going up. But there's also, I guess, other means of communication, podcasting, that is being done by people. And it could be that is replacing the community that was free radio and other free radio communities here in other cities as well. So we'll see. But if you're interested yourself in helping us find a transmitter site or in helping us secure a studio site and you want to give us a tip, we are still offering a $300 reward for finding us a place for a year, which we can rent for $300 a month. It doesn't have to be fancy. It could even be outside. We can build our own structure. It just has to have access to electricity. There has to be some kind of a toilet facility somewhere within a block or so, and internet access. So give me a call at 831-423-4833 if you have any ideas, either for a transmitter site or for a studio site. And now back to City Council impresario Larry Imwald.
I think with both of these closures, at Lot 27 and with Depot Park, the Benchlands is an interim location. It's the available space that we have presently until additional shelter capacity comes online. The program up at the Armory will be a significant addition to our capacity. But again, as directed by council, we're also working on a plan and a timeline for over the longer period for the closure of the Benchlands. The next update is with respect to safe parking program development. Again, this is in association with the oversized vehicle ordinance, and that is in the implementation process. We have a three-tier program in the works, tier one being emergency. Presently, the PD lot is available for emergency use. There are three spots there, including one for use by the Associated Faith community. Lot 4 is also being considered as a location for a Tier 1 emergency spot that is located outside of the coastal zone.
Note, the only lot available at the moment and the only lot that's been available if it's actually been available much at all, given the host, the police department, is the one at the police department at Laurel and Center Streets. I haven't heard of anybody recently who's actually been using that lot. I'm not sure whether it's because of police restrictions or because of the feeling of, mistrust of the Santa Cruz Police Department that, or lack of privacy. Who knows? But it, or maybe the restrictions on the Association of Faith Communities, the kind of program that they have and the churches, and maybe it's replicated by the police department. I don't know what their restrictions are. In fact, it would be a good thing for me to find out, not because those three spaces make much of a dent in what the needs of people in RVs and in cars are. I do know that the police department lot does not have a lot of RV space. It's not got a lot of space for oversized vehicles, for instance, which is the issue on the OVO ordinance that Larry is talking about. That the OVO ordinance is essentially a ban throughout Santa Cruz between the hours of midnight and 5 for all vehicles longer than 20 feet. And I think with some commercial exceptions. And also, if you can get a permit, which you can only do if you're a resident or connected to a resident or a hotel, and then only for a limited period of time. Now, I'm not quite sure where lot number 4 is, but again, he doesn't say it's available. He says it's being looked at. This is reminiscent of the language of Susie O'Hara, who was always talking about how they were considering and having hopes and expectations for and so forth, but not actually having the actual availability of the spaces that were being kind of dangled before the eyes of the city council as a sort of the excuse for either harsher laws against homeless folks in public spaces or as the claim that you don't need the kind of more extensive transitional encampments that people like Brent Adams have been pushing for and people like Alicia Kuhl have offered to manage.
The overnight program, there's an update. The zoning administrator, we had a hearing with the zoning administrator with respect to a coastal development permit and design permit. That hearing took place on January 5th and was carried over and be continued on the 12th. So that process is moving forward. Staff is also meeting weekly to...
Before we hear more establishment propaganda or fluffing or CEC, we're doing everything we can kind of rhetoric. The only thing presented to the OVO, the zoning administrator, who rubber-stamped quite merrily, or at least, shall we say, quite easily, the proposal, is that a proposal about what might be coming at some point. There's no indication of anything happening at the present time, and there's no indication of funding for anything happening at the present time, or of specific locations for anything happening at the present time on the so-called Tier 2 project. The way it's described, well, the way this so-called three-tier program is, the first tier is the emergency safe parking spaces. A minimum of 3 emergency safe parking spaces will be provided effective immediately. That's the police department, that he'll provide 3 spaces for dozens and dozens of RVs that are going to be affected by this OVO ordinance that was passed some months ago and is only looking for Coastal Commission approval. The local Coastal Commission is a soppy rubber stamp that has no problem presenting, okaying this. They did it before, even though the whole Coastal Commission turned them back and said, that's wrong. You can't do it. You don't have the RV spaces, and you don't have any proof that these R people are so terrible they require this kind of total ban to coastal access. That is to say, there was no showing of real crimes in any meaningful way, a real nexus between RV behavior and real criminal record. So the first tier is just emergency spaces, three for dozens and dozens of vehicles. The second is safe overnight parking. This is the lot four that I guess Larry is talking about, wherever that is, on city-owned land. Of a minimum of 30 oversized vehicles, they're going to partner with outside providers or directly provide overnight monitoring. Individuals in these parking spaces will be connected and linked to other transitional sheltering options available throughout the county. And none of this is specified, and none of this exists. And then the third tier is going to be a safe parking program where the city manager's office, public works, and homelessness response teams, I guess that's what he's the response manager, Larry Imwall is, will continue to work closely with county partners. Again, they're always big about, why isn't the county doing its share? It's getting all the money, including the human services and health departments. And, of course, the county isn't the one criminalizing the homeless people at night. It's the city that's doing that. And therefore, if they're going to be doing that, the law says, the courts have said, they need to provide space. So their attempt to go wah, wah, wah to the county is simply about the county not helping them. They're simply ignoring the fact that they're the ones who have created the problem with all the criminalization measures, because they want to increase property values, increase tourist attractiveness, and deal with the loud complaints of some what I would call bigoted folks who are in the city area. And then there's some legitimate complaints, of course, but not there's no attempt to recognize the needs of the people who are in this situation. If there had been, there would have been dumping stations set up. There would have been porta potty areas set up long ago. And it, of course, hasn't been done, because power concedes nothing without a demand. And RV people and homeless folks and their allies have not gotten together yet to do that kind of demand. Anyway, the third tier is also include case management support to assist individuals in directly engaging in pathways to housing. Again, that's the key phrase, because, you see, we can't really support homeless people as they are because, we don't want them here. But on the other hand, if we claim that we want to get rid of them, that doesn't sound good either. So let's call it pathway to housing, you see, and therefore, if they don't get housing, it's because they're service resistant. It's because they, not because the housing doesn't exist or because it's simply doesn't suit the needs of the people involved, or because they're trying to fit, maybe there's a reason I'm cursing here, round pegs into square holes. Families with children, seniors, transitional-aged youths, veterans, and individuals with disabilities will be prioritized. That's very nice. So again, these are all the very sweet best intentions of the OVO Safe Parking Program that Larry is talking about, and that was ratified the next day by the zoning administrator. That was yesterday on the 12th, and I'm going to be probably playing that either today at this show, some of that hearing, or maybe on Sunday. I think I may run out of time here today, so I don't know. Anyway, it's back to Larry and his shtick.
Move forward. The other implementation steps related to Tier 2, that includes the development of permitting process, the application, signs, and posting of signs that are required for the ordinance. Which is the 24/7 contracted service provider, part of.
And before we go on to Tier 3, which we have already kind of covered it, but Tier 2 is really, he's talking about posting signs that you can't be anywhere at night between midnight and 5 if your vehicle is longer than 20 feet and you don't have a permit. And you can't really get a permit unless you're connected with a resident or a hotel. So that being the case, it's all about enforcement. It's all about getting rid of the vehicles that just don't fit in with the aesthetic values and the fears and hopes of some folks in houses.
The safe parking program, recall the city issued an RFQ for homelessness-related services back in July 2021. on a rolling deadline, and the next rolling deadline for responses is February 2nd, 2022. So we're reposting that RFQ on the city's webpage.
Now, they're looking for people that want to run a safe parking program. And the first deadline didn't work too well. They didn't want to accept the people, or they didn't get enough. Whoever they got, I think there was some mention about 3 or 4 months ago, they got two offers, but they didn't say who they were or how much they were offering or what they were willing to pay, what the requirements were that they were demanding. There was nothing about it, and there has been nothing about it, and you don't hear anything about it from Larry here either. And there's just now another so-called rolling deadline, which I guess means they can roll it further ahead. All the while, they are claiming that they have emergency spaces at the police department for three people. So get the fuck out of town, all you oversized vehicles. And again, as I probably mentioned before, or maybe I didn't, but I'll say it again if I did, apologies. They added the zoning administrator's hearing yesterday. Suddenly added to the ordinance, the OVO ordinance, that it won't be enforced until there's adequate space. And in a way, that sounds just fine. It's sensible to say that. But it wasn't included. It wasn't included in the original ordinance. And therefore, you can't just sort of suddenly tack it on later without going to city council for public comment and so forth. So it violates the Brown Act, the Public Meetings Act. And it's also what it shows, of course, is the weakness that the entire law has. It sort of exposes the fact that they're really after enforcement. And therefore, but it becomes such an obvious violation of the Martin versus Boise decision because they're not providing any real options that they have to say, well, we'll suspend enforcement until we have real options. Again, it's not clear that even with the Coastal Commission's demand that they suspend enforcement back in 2016 and my demand to the local Coastal Commission authorities that they start monitoring this and demanding it, all I got from Ryan Maroney and others in the local Coastal Commission people was, oh, we'll talk to the deputies, the sheriffs about it because the sheriffs were engaging in harassment of people in the coastal zone. In violation of the Coastal Commission's clear statements about it in an 11-1 decision on August of 2016, which, incidentally, if you're interested in reading, you can find on Santa Cruz Indie Media at indiebay.org/Santa Cruz, one word, small letters. And it covers that, and I also cover some of the audio for that particular hearing. And it's pretty clear. I played some of it to the zoning administrator yesterday. Didn't matter. We believe our local people, they said. We trust that they will properly carry the message of the broader commission. But, of course, they didn't, and they didn't do it in August 2016 when they recommended that the city's nighttime ban on oversized vehicles be accepted by the Coastal Commission, and the Coastal Commission said, no, that's wrong. They said to the city assistant city manager who presented the case, Scott Collins, you haven't got the places for people to go, and you haven't proved that there's a need for this kind of serious curfew that restricts coastal access not just to homeless folks, but to everybody who has an oversized vehicle. And that can't be done in that way, but that didn't stop the authorities here from continuing to harass vehicles, and they didn't do so under that ordinance. They did so sort of using other tactics, but they essentially ignored the spirit and the rather clear wording of the 11-1 decision of the Coastal Commission. And the city never came back to try to correct its errors, although I guess you might regard this as their attempt to correct, although what they're doing here is they're trying to do a real kind of fast patch-up job where they're really doing a kind of a combo where they're a combination sweep where they're trying to sweep away the problem of homeless people who are on the ground and homeless people who are in vehicles, again, as part of a draconian total homelessness ban, except in the very limited areas that they have provision for, which is not in any way cover the majority of folks. The message being, stay away from Santa Cruz and get out of town if you're here, which, of course, is the message to poor people who are renting as well. But back to the homelessness czar's commentary here at City Council.
And trying to get the word out that we are interested in receiving additional proposals. So that's in process. So after that deadline, staff will be reviewing any responses for operating a safe parking program to be able to establish a Tier 3 program.
Again, no information whatsoever about anything they've already gotten. And they have gotten some proposals. That's at least what was said by Lee Butler, the previous homeless czar, in either October or September. But we don't get to hear any of it, and he doesn't mention it. It's just, well, we're still going to wait. And it seems I don't think they have a lot of motivation to set up this program. They don't seem to, anyway. And they certainly don't feel any motivation to inform the public about what's really going on.
And then my last update, and we've heard from council, you know, there's a lot of work going on with respect to homelessness-related issues. Most of it's going on behind the scenes, and you're interested in receiving more regular communications. So we're doing some internal communications planning to provide some more regular and consistent updates. In the meantime, we'll continue to provide updates through the city manager's weekly reports. And that concludes my updates, and I'm happy to answer any questions you all might have.
And before we get into that, and the rather tepid and pathetic questions that are asked, which are mainly, you're doing such a wonderful job, Larry, let's hear a little music.
Once upon a time, I read books and magazines. Then along came email. I thought that was pretty keen. I got on some good listservs. That was pretty neat. It was all so interactive. I was in the driver's seat. Then along came social media. That's when I lost my shit. Now there just wasn't time for anything else to fit. Facebook, Facebook, what else is there to do? Facebook, Facebook, sit and watch me spew. I feel like I've lost perspective. I don't know where I'm found. I just gotta see what's happening when I hear the sound of somebody responding to my latest post. Maybe someone even shared it. Then I'll have to post the toast. Hey, that wee baby is the cutest little tank. I'm gonna have to take a moment to click another link. Facebook, Facebook, I think I lost the plot. Facebook, Facebook, it's the only one I got. There's a drunk out in the alley. I think he's getting sick. The cat's playing with garbage. I'll have to take a pic. My friends and I once met, drank coffee and ate scones. Now we meet at the cafe and stare down at our phones. We can stop and post a selfie to show we're all sitting there. If we talk, we might miss out on something someone shares. Facebook, Facebook, just give me my news feed. Facebook, Facebook, it's all the news I need. They say it's a revolution, but I'm not sure that's so. I didn't use an app to find out what I needed to know. They didn't have the internet in 1848 when they rose up around the world without a single status update. Maybe that's straw man, or maybe it is not. Maybe there are better tools than the ones we've got. Facebook, Facebook, I'll get up off this chair. Facebook, Facebook, just got one more post to share. Facebook, Facebook, I'm not trying to be crass. Facebook, Facebook, someday I'll get up off my ass.
council member coming? I see you have your hand up. Thank you, Larry and Wally.
Thank you, Larry, and thank you, Matt, for those presentations. I did have two quick questions related to homelessness. I was under the impression with regards to the bench lanes, I thought that many council members had expressed some concern around when the floods happened and, you know, the impacts that happened after that and not wanting to see a homeless encampment in the bench lanes. And, I mean, it is a flood zone. We're not currently out of the rainy season yet. And so I'm just curious if you could speak to why we're still, you know, we're moving people back into this area that where we saw so many issues and we're not out of the rainy season yet. So,
you know, the obvious point that there was it's a dangerous situation to move them into. And, of course, the real answer that's not being said is, well, we haven't got anywhere else to go, and we're not going to let them go into San Lorenzo Park, which the upper San Lorenzo Park, which is a safer area, because that would frighten the natives, and we had so much trouble getting them out of there before. We just don't want them there. They don't deserve to be there. They don't need to be there, even though we haven't got any other place to put them. That's an obvious place. Other than our claims that we're going to be doing stuff very soon, according to Larry and his boss, the city manager, Matt Heffinger. Or is it Heffinger? I don't know.
Yeah, so the areas that are most at risk of flooding have been closed off, and we've moved people out of area, and we'll continue to keep them out of that area. The main part, what we call Benchlands North, is it's not at the same level of risk for flooding. It does get muddy, but this is the spot that we have available at this time to be able to offer people. Chico, this is where most folks in Depot Park were before the flood. So we've moved people out of the areas that...
Yeah, no, they actually... San Lorenzo Park is quite available. In fact, it was suggested, and people moved there immediately when the floods started to happen, and instead police came and threatened to ticket them in the middle of the rainstorms. So that's not exactly an honest reply. It's not the site that they're willing to make available, but it is available. No one is using it at the moment, other than the dog walkers and the ducks.
That are at most risk. And again, the real goal is to be able to develop additional shelter capacity. And again, the armory program will open up 75 slots. And so our goal is really towards reducing and ultimately closing the Benchlands area.
And there you have it, the honest answer. We want to reduce the number of visible homeless people in the Benchlands area. That's their objective. But putting them far away in the armory area and off to the behind barbed wire at the 1220 River Street area.
And then my second question, the armory has been up and running for a number of years now. The county's been running that program. It's my understanding the city helped to secure that site.
But before we hear more from Justin Cummings, I just notice he has nothing to say about, well, what about the safety of those people, and what about the San Lorenzo Park area? How about that? They were there before, and in fact, the court ruled within an injunction they should be allowed to stay there, at least for the 2-month period until March when the injunction changed. This is the defender of the people. He's not, of course. I continue to call him an Uncle Tom. Yes, I'm white. Yes, he's black. It doesn't really matter what your skin color is. If you are betraying the interests of the people who elected you, who are poor, and you entered with that kind of rhetoric and that kind of alliance, and then you turn right around and do the opposite, in order to, I don't know whether it's to further your political career or whether you simply, I don't know, became convinced that Cynthia Matthews has the way. In this case, I guess it would be Donna Myers now. Although Matthews is still a strong voice, sort of a shadow mayor of the council still, at least a strong influence. Then you need to be called out for what you're doing. And the reason you call someone an Uncle Tom is because they're black and because they're selling out the interests of people who are black and people who are poor and people who are outside.
What's happening with all those people who are currently there? Because it sounds like, you know, if the city's taking over, there's already people who were served, who, you know, the county's helping to serve up there. And we're saying we're going to put in 75 beds. I think there's probably over 100 up there right now. And so I'm just curious, you know, it sounds like we're losing capacity at the Armory and there's already people there. So how are we going to, like, you know, manage with the people who are already up there and trying to serve their needs, and also the additional people that we have scattered throughout the community?
And, of course, one of Cummings' big tropes, one of his themes when he was breaking with the progressive majority he was elected with, and it eventually signaled the doom of the progressive agenda, went and it stood aside while his two fellow council members, Crone and Glover, were recalled and joined up with the Matthews majority, that the county is really the salvation. That he talked about the two by two committee in the county and working with the county. This was another big theme of Cynthia Matthews, that it's not the city that needs to do anything other than, you know, arrest, cite, and drive out homeless people. it's the county that's supposed to provide the services, because the city doesn't have the money, doesn't have a Department of Social Services, et cetera, et cetera. But in fact, as I said, if it's the county, the city that's criminalizing people, then it's the city that needs to address the issue. And indeed, we had to go to the courts to get at least temporary relief from this in the attempt of the previous city manager to run away people from the driveway people from the San Lorenzo Park. And that actually has resulted in a de facto benchlands encampment, which they are, of course, now trying to eliminate. Not that it's the best kind of encampment. In fact, many people have said, well, some have said they prefer the Depot Park. And, of course, they're driving people away from Depot Park because this, ironically, was the one place that the staff finally recommended as a possible gone-by-dawn area, though now it was, of course, it became, after the flood, it became a 24-hour encampment area. But a gone-by-dawn area was suggested in 2019, and it was pushed by Susie O'Hara and the homelessness staff. And that, instead of other places, of which there were several hundred mentioned, which were all ruled out by the staff, and you now have the situation where Depot Park is being, it's too visible for people, and it's too close to decent, ordinary, middle-class life. We don't want that to happen. I mean, goodness, you don't want to show poverty next to No. You wouldn't want to do that. You know, next to people playing sports and in the sports fields, that doesn't sound. It doesn't look good, does it?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question over the long term. So in the near term, right, there are still the county programs, both in the Armory building and the pavilion, that are going to be continuing for a period of time. At the same time, we're adding our 75-bed program. But you're right, there's a timetable. By June 30th, the county programs are going to change, are going to close. The pavilion may close sooner. I don't have an update on what the county's timeline or thinking is for that particular program up there.
I would wonder why he doesn't. I mean, particularly with a council that has put so much emphasis on cooperation with the county, and it is, and wants the county to do its quote fair share to deal with the homeless, to know how long their programs are continue, how many people are being affected, because you have 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people in the city area, and the question is how many of them are going to be not served by these fanciful programs that don't even exist yet. You can't really believe there's any serious credibility here unless you actually are trying to determine what is being served by the county as well. And he said he hasn't got any idea about that. And that doesn't bode well.
I know that the main building, their plan was June 30th. So that is certainly a question in terms of how many people are going to be in those programs at the time that they close down. I know that they're continuing to work on the rehousing efforts and move people through that pipeline. But come July 1, there will be a loss of capacity up at that location. We'll have a person program. And then I think the question is, you know, what are the additional shelter opportunities that the county would be looking at?
I mean, notice the rhetoric here. Shelter, housing pipeline. As though it's, you know, it's people are just flowing into housing. I have not seen any decent stats or heard any about the number of people who have been effectively housed, let's say, by the famous Housing Now, formerly known as the Homeless Lack of Services. I call them that program. They call themselves the Homeless Services Center. So you don't have any real sense of what's being done. It's a way of funneling money into something and appearing to be doing something when you're really paying people to go out and look for housing that doesn't currently exist, because most of your energy and effort and developer backslapping and consultant fees are going to high-end housing or so-called affordable housing that is certainly not affordable to people who are homeless and not very affordable to people who are on the edge of homelessness.
And then I think articulating what, if any, additional city role there might be. Again, we're also working on other transitional community camps. So the city has a plan for 150 additional shelter beds, but the status of the county programs does, you know, raise that bigger issue, more long-term issue of what the overall shelter capacity is within the city.
150 shelter beds. Well, I don't know. I've heard of 30 tents at this gravel barbed wire lot at 1220 River. I've heard of 75 spaces outdoors at the Armory, kind of side by side with the county's spaces of, I don't know how many are there. That's close. I guess that's 110 or so, or 105 maybe. So, yeah, and then you need another 45. But how does that deal with the hundreds and hundreds of people who are actually currently homeless? It doesn't.
I think it'd be good at some point if we could just get some numbers on
this is Justin Cummings again.
The amount of beds that we've been able to offer over the past, like, you know, 2 years at minimum, and how that's changed over time and between the city and the county. Because, you know, we went from 1220 River to getting the Armory opened up to then having all the capacity with COVID. Now we're seeing, you know, a lot of the county programs coming offline. The city's stepping some up. And I think for the community, it'd just be good to have a sense of, you know, how many beds we've gained and lost over time. And kind of,
this is a half-assed statement, though. In other words, he's not directing. So I'd like to move that the staff be instructed to determine exactly what the stats are at our next council meeting. If you don't mind, we'd like to know. You know, come on, you can get to work on that one. Let's find out specifically what that is. Instead, it's just sort of, you know, gee, it would be good to know. You know, that's not likely to put a fire under their ass. It certainly hasn't so far. And maybe it indicates that he knows it's the staff that has the power and they will do whatever the hell they want. And he just kind of has to coax them and wheedle with them and plead with them instead of really trying to demand that the council stand behind this. I mean, he could certainly attempt to do it, even if he failed to get the council majority behind him. But he doesn't.
How the city is performing now versus how it's performed in the past, because we did also lose I think it was the River Street Shelter that was one of the buildings on the Housing Matters campus where we lost a bunch of beds there. And I know that the capacity has changed over 1220 River and Armory over time. So I think it would just be good to get a sense of, you know, what are some of the trade-offs between having either smaller programs or larger programs, and then just how the number of beds have changed over time. It would be helpful for having those discussions with the community. So
it would certainly be helpful. Mm-hmm. How nice. But, of course, it's not going to happen, I don't think, although we'll hear what he has to say in a moment. Also, another point is that this is about shelters, not about housing, although all this is always being phrased as a pathway to housing. He's not asking how many people have actually been housed, because that really blows the whistle on the entire scam, that if so few people are being housed, there's obviously something fundamentally wrong here, and it has to be really addressed, or stop pumping money into it. Realize that what you're doing is you're pumping money into something that is, it's a facade rather than something of substance. And it provides employment for a certain class of people that already have housing, middle-class workers.
Thank you very much. And I appreciate all the work that you're doing on this topic.
And, of course, that thank you very much probably tends to soften any attempt to get a real response and a real commitment. But maybe I'm wrong. Let's see what he says.
Thank you. Yeah, well, we can work on that information.
Thank you, Council Member Cummings. I have Council Member Brown and then Council Member Golder.
I don't know that that's much of a response. We can work on that. He doesn't say we will work on that. We'll be back on that in 2 weeks or 4 weeks. But, you know, yeah, we certainly hear you. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Sure. Let's take another musical break, and then we'll continue with this this examination. A somewhat caustic examination, I admit. But I would insist justifiably caustic. So here's a song by Rovix called Kick It While It's Down. And he writes, on September 16, 2008, the global financial crisis that was the logical conclusion of decades of government deregulation began in earnest, with banks failing all over the place. A bipartisan taxpayer-funded bailout of the rich would soon follow. The next one is coming.
I'd say the verdict now is clear. Capitalism really sucks. Privatizing everything for years left most of us out of luck. The dreams most of us once had are dead. The jobs around don't pay. Heck, I barely have a roof over my head. And I've heard most of my neighbors say, if this is the glory of the market, tent city, USA, then let's take this powder keg and spark it. After all, it's the American way. Let us now look through a different prism. Let us work for the common good. Let us put an end to capitalism. Let us do now as we should. And kick it while it's down. 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 The capitalists are parasites, the bane of society. They don't give a crap for human rights. All they care about is money. The billionaires buy the Congress, then they make up all the rules. So if voting is no way to seek redress, then we must use other tools. And kick it while it's down, kick it while it's down, kick it while it's down. Kick it while it's down, kick it while it's down, kick it while it's down. Half the country is in drought, burning up and blowing away. It's a climate crisis, there's no doubt, but be that as it may. The market says it's time to drill for oil. The market says cut down all the trees. The market says build pipelines needs the soil. But in recent years, the market's on its knees. So kick it while it's down, kick it while it's down, kick it while it's down. Kick it while it's down, kick it while it's down, kick it while it's down. We need food, not bombs. The market doesn't care about the bread lines or your hungry mom. The market only cares about the market. What's behind the guarded gate? So you can take your limousine and park it, trade it in for a welfare state, and kick it while it's down, 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 kick it while it's down.
We can work on that information.
Thank you, Councilmember Cummings. I have Councilmember Brown and then Councilmember Holder.
Thank you, Mayor Bruner. And thank you, Mr. Imwali, for providing that update. I just really want to appreciate all of the work that you're doing to try to navigate this really, really challenging situation. And
Now, the problem here, again, is all this rhetoric that's fluffing up what, to me, is a lack of information. Now, maybe compared to Lee Butler, it's more information than was being given before. But in terms of the actual need or the costs or the people who are involved in ultimately providing these services for the transitional encampments and so forth, there's no information. There's no new information. There's less information than there was 4 months ago for that, for at least part of that program. So why is she praising this guy? At least maybe she's teaching me how to say his name properly, Larry Imwalda. That's nice. But this is, again, this kind of subservience to the staff. It's a way of, if you're trying to fly on the staff's airplane, which is not a good flight if you're really trying to deal with real issues, and it's maybe not even a good flight if you're even trying to pretend to deal with real issues. But it's certainly not a good flight if you're supposedly the most liberal or progressive member of the council, as Sandy Brown kind of claims she is. Speaking of which, she's not answered any of my emails since my conversations with her about 2 or 3 months ago at one of the protests, where she was effusively reassuring me that she wanted to talk, and in fact she would only talk a bit later and we could do it. And I said I'd give her a call. I mean, I kind of bought her sincerity, because she's very persuasive and her a good politician in that regard, which of course means she's a good liar, or at least she's a person who can very easily change her mind. And I know that some people get upset with me, Scott Graham is one of them, when I criticize Councilmember Brown, because you say, well, she's the only progressive you've got. No, you don't have a progressive if that's what you've got on the council. And if that's what you got to call it what it is. Anyway, here's some more of Councilmember Sandy Brown.
With the direction that you've received from council to really be responsive, I know it's not easy, so I just want to say thank you for that. And I guess Councilmember Cummings asked most of my questions, but I did...
No, but he didn't follow up on them. And this simpering approach... is it kind of disgusts me, but most important, I've got to watch out, because I don't want to overly criticize Brown, because she's broken her promises to me again and again. But it certainly has to be mentioned that reality is not something that I can completely ignore. And it tends to influence how I describe what she's doing. But again, I guess, you can certainly make your own judgment about this. The questions need to be asked are, what about the other 80% of the homeless community? How much is it costing? How far have you actually gotten? What individuals and organizations have volunteered to accept, and what kind of offers have they made in terms of what they're willing to what costs that they're willing to take on, or how much they're claiming we'll have to pay them to do this kind of work. What kind of parameters are they setting? None of that. And this is almost a year after the CSSO ordinance was passed, that is essentially what Larry Imwalla is talking about. So it's not like we're being rushed into this, or that the staff is being rushed to make demands. They've had all this time, and they're getting paid regularly for doing this stuff. Anyway, here's more. And of course, meanwhile, people are outside, cold, shivering, getting pretty darn wet and flooded out as well, and move from place to place in rather uncertain health conditions. And you have someone who's just praising the staff. It's unhealthy.
I did want to just ask a follow-up to what's happening with Lot 27. I understand the need to have...
Now, what you're going to hear now is the weak-kneed attempt to say, what the hell are you kicking Food Not Bombs out on a three-day notice without any place to go and without any decent interval here? What's going on here? I mean, are you going to provide the food services that they're not providing? I would move that this not be done, you know, for a certain period of time. That, you know, have you had good communication with this guy? He says you haven't. Why haven't you? If that's the case, none of this comes up.
Have that space available for the Clearwater Soquel work, and I also understand that moving large shipping containers without a lot of notice and kind of a lot of uncertainty about where they're going to go, where Food Not Bombs is going to go, is another, you know, challenge. And I don't think
I mean, gosh and gee whiz and golly, I'm embarrassed to ask you these questions that you have suddenly laid down the law for Food Not Bombs. You who haven't fed a single person in Santa Cruz who's on the streets that I know of, whereas you're directing people suddenly to rearrange everything because at a snap of your fingers. And in other words... Well, I think I hope you get my drift that this is a really inappropriate response to this kind of action if you are an ally of Food Not Bombs. You speak about it with, I would think, some intensity, some anger, and at least some determination. It doesn't sound like that's what she's doing at all. It sounds very apologetic.
They intend to shut down operations. So, I think we've all received, I'm not sure if everybody's had a chance to read, a message from Keith McHenry about the intention to leave on their terms when they are able to figure out the next step. And so I guess I'm just wondering, it's past 2:00. we're here in the meeting. I'm not sure what's going on over there.
And what she doesn't say is that they were given a deadline and an ultimatum to get out by 2:00 or they would be arrested. And their properties would be confiscated. They would be treated like criminals, in other words. And all she's saying is, I mean, one knows she's in the midst of a hostile city council. But she knows that, too. She shouldn't even be there if she doesn't want to stand up to it. Otherwise, she helps to provide protective cover for the rest of them. That's how I view it.
It seems to me that given the history of the city's efforts to enforce evictions at various points in time, in various locations, under a variety of circumstances, they have been pretty contentious and kind of on the ground in the moment and then kind of the broader community conversation. So I'm just wondering if there is any intention to try to work with Mr. McHenry and Food Not Bombs to maybe have a smoother transition in that space?
You know, this sets up Larry to simply say, "Sure, I do, and I've tried very hard, we're just doing what we have to do, and we're going to do it, and all is all is well." Instead of being forced to say, "Didn't you? And why are you giving ultimatums to someone in this way?" And I would like to move that you make sure you allow an ample time so we don't have the kind of contention that has happened in the past when Food Not Bombs has been moved from here to there to here to there, as it has at least four times in the last 2 years, not to mention attempting to move homeless people endlessly in apparent violation of Martin versus Boise, of course. The court decisions, and it eventually had to be stopped by a court injunction or by mass community action. She's using kind of euphemisms and soft talk instead of straight talk. Sandy Brown has always had this problem. She used to be on the police review board 20 years ago, and she couldn't really stand up to police misconduct. And so she kind of left the board before it became more militant and then had its head chopped off by the city council. Still, let's hear more.
Just curious about kind of there's the order and there's the need, and then there's the kind of the reality that can be a little messier. So any thoughts on that?
Oh, by all means, let's not make it messy. I mean, it's not the question. It would be unjust, unfair, cruel, and foolish to people. It's more that it would be messy. It would be contentious. Have you any thoughts on that?
Yes, we have a plan in place in the event that Food Not Bombs does not remove its property. I have not received any communication from Food Not Bombs.
This is in direct contradiction to the email I received, a copy of from Keith McHenry that was a direct communication to Larry Imwalda, or Imwalla. And I think he sent at least one and maybe two letters to him pointing out that Keith did, that he was working with the water authorities to address the issue. But I'm realizing I have spent three-quarters of the time on this the city council, or at least a lot of it, a large chunk of this netcast. I'd like to play a little of some of the preparation to stand up for Food Not Bombs that happened about the same time that the city council meeting was happening. It began at noon on the 11th and continued through the afternoon. So let's take a musical break, and then let's hear a little of the voices from the Food Not Bombs resistance, which were kind of inspiring. I was there, and I hope you were too, and I hope you are the next time this kind of situation comes up. So this song is called Iceland 2008, and it's described as follows. On September 29, 2008, Iceland began to nationalize its banks. Later, they would start jailing their bankers who had joined in on the corrupt feeding frenzy initiated on Wall Street, which spread to Europe and elsewhere.
Iceland is an island with half a million or so Vikings, mostly known for volcanoes, hot springs, and fishing, known for its welfare state, for being good and socialistic, certainly not known for being corrupt or nepotistic. But in the USA and Europe, when they were deregulating banks, Iceland's politicians took bribes and joined their ranks. Soon you had a situation one would think just couldn't be. A bank whose debt was worth 10 times the country's GDP. When Wall Street imploded, sure enough it spread. Banks all over the world were floating in the red. All over the world, governments made the plan to cut spending and raise taxes on the working woman and working man. The banks were bailed out while the people had to pay. But in Iceland, people thought there must be a better way. And the earth stood still a moment. Fear was struck in every top. When Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, when Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. folks were in the streets in Reykjavik and just couldn't be ignored. They said this is a debt we Icelanders can't afford. Let's guarantee deposits of all our people, yes indeed. But as for all the speculators motivated by their greed to make really dumb investments, to them Iceland said good luck. Sorry for your losses, but we don't really give a fuck. The 1% all trembled when they took away the trough. When Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. The UK called them terrorists, said we cannot let this stand. Who do these peacenik blondes think they are in Iceland? They threatened isolation, an economy in flames. But the Icelanders said sorry, but the banks can settle their own claims. Though that might be harder for them now that they're under house arrest. Or else they fled the country as they were most unwelcome guests. And now Reykjavik's recovery just makes a fat cat sputter and cough. Since Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. If you haven't heard of this example, perhaps there's a reason why the owners of the world don't want this kind of shit to fly. They say we all must pay up in this shakedown by the mob if we can't afford to pay the rent because we don't have a job. They say it's not their problem if we're forever shackled by their debt. We must save the 1% from the fate they should have met. But there is an alternative, though it makes the fat cats scoff, that Iceland told the bankers. Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off. When Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers, Iceland told the bankers to fuck off.
And I think I played that one probably a few weeks, maybe a few months ago, but it's still a catchy one, and I liked it. Hope you did, too. So it's about 5 after 12. I'm down here at the Lot 27, which is, well, there are bunches of folks here. Hudnabond is just setting up its meal distribution over by the Community Credit Union. There's still now two, count them, two storage containers here. But the tent village that has been around for the last month or so, maybe longer, probably longer, looks like it's being dismantled. I still count about, I don't know, 5, 6, or 7 tents still up, but that's a significant reduction. Looks like Russell is packing up his stuff. New volunteers are arriving for the meal. I certainly do. Your job is to distribute some of them to whoever wants them.
Okay. Thank you. Cool.
If you feel like it.
I'm like trying to coordinate my stuff right now, but I will.
Indeed. When you can, do. So we have a volunteer who's arrived. What's your name?
Naomi.
And Naomi, what brings you to here?
I'm just pissed off about how the houseless people are being treated, and especially lately, they've been moved around a lot, so I want to come and help out. This is my first time helping out with Food Not Bums. But
wow. How long have you been in Santa Cruz?
A few years. I'm a UCSD student. Yeah.
And UCSD is still zooming it up these days?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, appreciate your being here myself. I'm a supporter. Are you able to pay the rents in Santa Cruz these days? How are you doing with that?
Fortunately, I do come from a upper middle class background, so I get support from my family. So I do come from a privileged position. So luckily I can, but I understand that it's really high for a lot of people. And I think if I didn't have family support, it'd be a different story for me.
Did you just come of your own initiative, or did somebody drag you along?
I came because I saw a post about it, and I'm, like, in some radical circles at UCSC, and someone mentioned it, and I was like, I want to show up for it. I've been helping out with Pajaro Rising a bit.
With?
Pajaro Rising.
Pajaro Rising.
Which is, like, the warming center and, like, group
encampments that were refugees from the Pajaro River people.
Yeah, in Watsonville, and so I've been helping get them food because they've been displaced a lot lately, and I think they're currently trying to find another place to stay permanently, but it's been a struggle.
What's the story? I know that two of their encampments have been threatened with eviction.
Yeah.
Did they leave the second one as well?
I believe so. I've just been following them on Instagram. I think they had to leave their place on the 9th, the last place they were at. They moved. I know what they were saying. They had, like, tickets or vouchers to be at a Motel 6 for a bit, and then they had to leave on January 4th, and then they
set up another Bridge Street.
Encampment, and then they got kicked out on January 9th, so I don't know where they are right now. But I knew they were trying to find, like, a church or more permanent space to be in. But
how many are they at the moment?
They said 25 to 30 people. Yeah.
Last time you were there was...
I was there a few days ago, maybe on the 8th, and I brought some food over.
So here you are, weighing in at Santa Cruz Food Not Bomb.
Yeah. This is Luke.
Hey, I'm Robert. You are...
Pardon? Oh, I'm Luke.
Luke. Another one of these UCSC radical types?
Well, I'm a graduate, but yeah.
Graduated.
Yeah. I'm sticking around, so yeah, you could say that.
And is this your first experience in the Food Not Bomb scene? Or?
With Food Not Bombs, yes.
Well, thank you for coming, as I said, to your associate here.
Well, you know what they're doing is fucked up, so.
Oh, yeah, for sure. No question. Anything happening on campus, like strikes, or is everybody just hiding out from the COVID?
I wouldn't quite know. I've not been to campus in a little while.
Oh.
But Naomi is the person to ask.
I mean, of this year, I'm not sure. I don't think so, but I know there's been some organizing around COVID lately because... a lot of students aren't impressed with how the UC is treating COVID. They have, like, a lack of masks and tests and, like, resources on how to stay safe. So I know, like, some of my friends who are involved with WISC and other groups are working around that.
Many UCSC casualties from COVID that you heard? By casualties, I mean fatalities or serious hospitalizations.
I'm not sure about that. But I know that recently they found that 5% have COVID, but I'm not sure, like, who is...
Whether it's mild, serious, or fatal.
I assume most are asymptomatic, but I don't know. I don't know. They haven't really said anything about that.
Fair enough. Okay, well, it's January 11th, about 15 after 12. I'm talking with...
Rooney.
And Rooney, you're an old-timer, new-timer, some-timer, Food Not Bombs?
I have volunteered for Food Not Bombs before, but I'm mostly involved right now with Pajaro Rising, the group that's been evicted four times in the last month out in Watsonville.
Now, last I heard, they were evicted from their bridge camp on the 9th. Anything new?
Right now, we're just regrouping and figuring out what to do next. We've been on Monterey County land, Santa Cruz County land, and Watsonville City land, and they evict us every time. So
are you all scattered, or are people at a secret location?
Scattered, I would say. Yeah. Yeah.
And last time you were there was?
Last time I was there was Sunday. Yeah.
Day before yesterday.
Yeah. But people have been there every single day. We've been making sure people have the food they need, the survival gear they need, the support they need to get to services, rides, everything.
Is there a gathering point where people should go if they want to be involved?
We do have an Instagram. That's the best way to get updates about everything. We don't have a place right now to gather. But if you follow our Instagram, pajaro.rising, that's where all our updates and requests for support are.
Dig it.
Yeah.
How long have you been involved with this criminal group?
I guess it's been a couple months ongoing. I know a few people were working with the residents of the levee before that, so it's probably been... It's been years that harm reduction has been down there working with people on the levee, but this recent group coming together is just a few months old.
And have you done this kind of activity before?
Yes, I have, yeah.
And were you successful, or were you shoved aside by the authorities?
I would say primarily shoved aside by the authorities, but I think the great success is in forming those community groups and those networks and those connections. And I actually think like Food Not Bombs has been supporting us out there too. And so we want to be here today supporting y'all. And I think that it would be great if we could do a county-wide effort, a county-wide protest, county-wide march, something like that. Because that's where the success comes in, I think, is when all these groups that are doing all this small mutual aid stuff come together.
How many folks are here from the Pajaro group today?
There's supposed to be about five of us here today. I'm the only one so far, but people are coming.
Are you a Watsonviller?
No, I live in Santa Cruz. I have lived out there, though. So.
Anybody actually from Watsonville here or from the Pajaro River encampment?
I don't know if anyone out from out there is going to make it today, but, yeah, there's people who live in the Watsonville area that are community members that are supporting the group as well. So.
And what's an example of the kind of work you've done in the past that this reminds you of?
I mean, I work at Sabrosa, so that's kind of like a hub for finding different groups like this. And I've kind of jumped around from harm reduction and to different protests and stuff like that. But this is the most organized group that I've worked with, I suppose, consistently.
And so I know that you were involved in the mass blockage of police harassment in San Lorenzo Park a year ago?
I wasn't able to be there because I'm immunocompromised, but I was doing off-site support.
Stand a little further away from
it. Yeah, I was doing off-site support, trying to get protection for people who are going to get arrested and stuff like that. But no, I wasn't able to be there.
And turned out nobody got arrested, or very few anyway, as I remember.
Yeah, I don't think anyone ended up getting arrested that day.
Here's somebody you might want to flyer.
Oh. Would you like to flyer?
Been talking with, if you want to say again.
Rooney.
Thank you, Rooney.
Thank you.
Did you get arrested, Rooney, the last time at the Pajaro River?
No.
Good, because I remember there were five of you. Well, four, actually, who got arrested.
Yeah, we will need support. Their court date was rescheduled for February, so we will need support with that.
When will that become? What date?
I don't know the date off the top of my head, but it's the first week in February.
Now, well, you say Instagram is a place to go for news on that?
Yeah, Instagram, pajaro.rising.
Thank you, Rooney.
Thank you, Robert.
All right.
I feel for the homeless population in this town, and I wish there was a better solution. I wish there was any solution.
You're a working man who works nearby.
Yes.
And how long have you been a resident of Santa Cruz? Or are you a resident of Santa Cruz? Kind of expensive to live here.
I'm a resident of the county, 30 years.
Well, that's good.
We're still negotiating with the water company to find out if we have to, if they really need to be in here, if they'll give us the week that we ask.
And this is Keith McHenry on the Bullhorn. I was talking to people on the sidewalk as the others, activists, put up a Food Not Bombs banner blocking the entrance to the area in hopes of forestalling, I believe, the city's attempt to, destroy the Food Not Bombs setup by confiscating their property at 2 o'clock, as they threatened to do.
But we need to give a week's notice to everybody that where the new meal is, because all these people are going to go back to
this. Thank you, man.
And then also unload it, put it in the vehicles, and take it to the new location. So we need help with that. And
when is that?
We don't know yet. Because we're trying to figure, first of all, we just need to know from the city if the correspondence between the city and us and the water company, as they come to an agreement, that they, you know, they're not going to, like, come in at 2 o'clock today and get rid of it. And that's why the strategy of what this protest is somewhat vague, because we are every minute working with Melissa at SoCal Water and a city government that doesn't respond to anything. So that's what's going on. So we're hoping that that will be, that even between now and 2 o'clock, that will be clarified. And, you know, we explained to the water company
I got a white.
You know, we just got ambushed. You know, if we were told a week ago by the city, then, and they really were going to put tractors in here, which the last time they didn't put any tractors here. They just gave us a 3-day notice on a Friday at 3. And then with that, they fenced off this area, and then it stayed empty without tractors for 3 months. And so it's like, really, do you need to put... So it wasn't until yesterday that the water company responded that they did not want to use, they couldn't for whatever reason use the Wheelworks parking lot behind Wheelworks, and that they absolutely had to do this. So now we just need a week to get it together. So we have to make flyers and advertise the new place. We have to get out press releases so that all the announcements on all the radio stations are correct. That the announcements in the newspapers, well, we got to change everything on all our Facebook pages and, you know, social media and our website. And then we have to actually physically move everything and set up. And we have to keep cooking every single day. And so today, I think, is the 668th day in a row we've been out here sharing food. So it's also kind of crazy that they wouldn't even dignify the idea that we did the Christmas. We did Thanksgiving for the whole community, let alone there's probably a lot less shoplifting and looting going on just as directly a result of our meal. So anyway, that's where things are at the moment. If anybody wants to also speak about their impressions of this and that, we can pass this around. And that's great that the banner works. And this is the replacement for the banner that Take Back Santa Cruz stole from us when we were set up over at, and it's kind of not as nice a banner, actually, as the one they stole, in that it's heavy vinyl, and it can't fold up in a bag in my van. So, anyway, who wants to speak?
Yep, okay.
You might, so Robert might have other news about the city council meeting today and what's going on with all that.
Hi, I'm Robert, and I don't have a lot of news, good or bad, about the what I call the shitty council meeting today. It's at 2 o'clock for anybody who's got a strong stomach and doesn't mind zooming around or pounding on the door of City Hall, which is where they're, I guess, the city manager, the new city manager, Matt Huffinger, I'm not sure if that's his name, is going to be managing a Zoomed hearing. There's usually stuff that I don't really follow. I'm mostly into the question of homeless civil rights. And they have already kind of done away with that. There's another actual, there's a hearing coming up tomorrow by the zoning administrator, which will essentially rubber stamp the OVO law. You may be familiar with this if you've been following. The OVO law is so-called oversized vehicle ordinance. That is a law that says, in essence, get a permit or get out of town between midnight and 5 o'clock in the morning, which is a way, essentially, if you're in an oversized vehicle, which is over 20 feet long, which does impact, I don't know if it impacts people in this lot at the moment, but it does impact people throughout the town who don't have the resources to have more modernized vehicles, or whose vehicles aren't in the best shape, or whose neighbors want to get rid of them, which happens quite frequently, not necessarily for good reasons. That's happening tomorrow, and it's a Zoomed hearing on at 10 o'clock in the morning. And if you're interested in it, I've written about it. You go to Santa Cruz Indie Media and you can read my lengthy commentary. It's essentially something we're going to appeal to the Coastal Commission, because they're trying to ban vehicles in the coastal zone, that is to say oversized vehicles, and they really can't do it if they also want to provide coastal access to people. So that's one of their contradictory problems. They tried to do it 5 years ago, and they failed. But, of course, the police and the deputies up and down the coast are not terribly law-abiding regarding certain kinds of people in certain kinds of vehicles. Anyway, so those are the two things I know about that are happening. The so-called city council, or as I call it, the shitty council, at 2 o'clock today. If It turns out that nothing is happening today at 2 here. I suppose you can get involved. I don't have a lot to announce about the actual agenda. Although, for those of you who know Susie O'Hara, does anybody here know the name Susie O'Hara? Probably not. It's kind of before the time of a lot of people here. She's a rather notorious city official who was the homelessness czar for some years and gave false testimony in court about the resources available to homeless people. As a consequence, the city drove everybody off of Ross Camp. That was some years ago. And she is now suing the city because she's claiming that the city created a hostile work environment for her. It'd be too bad the homeless aren't suing the city for the hostile work environment that she created. That she and other people in the city staff mostly. So that's what, the only thing I noticed on the agenda is she's got a claim in for $1.2 million, which is sort of, they will turn down her claim, and then her attorneys will take it to court, and you'll get to, probably something will happen behind the scenes, and no one really know what it is. Anyway, I noticed they're clearing away people are kind of, to some extent, dismantling their tents and so forth. Does anybody who live here or who has news of other stuff around homeless civil rights issues? Because I notice there are a number of people from Pajaro. Yeah, that means you too. You want to talk? You can if you want.
I need an ACLU lawyer right now.
Yeah.
I got to get a court date. Literally.
Here's a man who needs an ACLU lawyer. So all you ACLU lawyers who are hanging out here, raise your hands and step forward. Of course, the ACLU has done nothing in the city as far as injunctions go here. The only thing done was by the homeless union, the California Homeless Union, and that one kind of died off, at least here, but not in the Pajaro area in the summer. And so the city staff has not moved people out of the benchlands. They're just kind of trying to soak them out, is how I look at it.
You'll go down, Kenny Grew.
And anything you want to say yourself, sir?
Tell him.
I will screw every box from the clock tower to the boardwalk. How many millions of dollars is that going to cost you? You know how many use? A fucking paperclip and super glue. Ask Ken Bill Key. You can't fix that fucking box. Nobody goes in or out. I glued all your vehicles to the ground. What are you going to do, Pink? I got Jack for ass. What do you got?
And there you have direct action, folks.
Bank. Don't fuck with me no more. Done. Oh, the five-star dumped me by that obelisk.
So, anybody else want to talk?
Military said no.
Here, I say it to you.
Okay, go for it. Just keep press the button and away you go.
Hello?
Four silver stars! Two five stars! Shut the fuck up!
You know, I've been a resident of California all my life. And now here I find myself with no place to go, nothing I can afford. I bought a trailer to try to make it because this wouldn't happen in my personal world. And now I can't find a place for my trailer. And you know, first, loitering is illegal. Okay, so keep moving, even if you have nowhere to go. Then homelessness is illegal. And you know what? Now, to be hungry is illegal. You know, stuff that we all need. Just give me a place where I can park my trailer. That's all I'm asking. I'm not asking for a handout. You know, everybody needs somewhere to go. So provide a place, you know, so we won't be homeless. And we won't be adding to the crime situation, depression situation, the mental illness situation. You figure out where you want to go to the bathroom every morning and start your morning like that. And see how you feel after a couple of months. So, I don't know the solution. I just know that there's a big problem. And everybody who used to be a resident and somebody who had a job has nothing now. Somehow that doesn't seem right to me. It's a society that won't take care of its older people once you get over 65. And they don't even take care of you before that. I mean, I've been taxed to death all my life. And now I have to stay in my car because I can't find a place to put something. You know, everything's illegal. To park a place, to park on the coast, to stay here. So, we need to do something because it's getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And what kind of person should have to live in your car because they're poor or because they don't know where to go? So, provision, that's all we're asking for. You know, I'm not asking for a handout. Maybe even if you were asking for a handout, a good society would take care of those people who can't take care of themselves. That's all I really have to say.
And that's about it for this edition of Bathrop Spears Broadsides, except for this final song. I'll be returning with more on Sunday, likely. And who knows, maybe there'll be some good news as well, although I think the spirit of resistance to me is always good news. The name of this song is Captain Kruger is a Nazi, and Rovix writes, on September 7th, 2010, the Portland, Oregon Police Review Board noted that police captain Mark Kruger did, in fact, appear to be a Nazi, but that wasn't illegal. Although Captain Kruger has a history of violence against protesters and was found to have created an informal Nazi memorial in a neighborhood park, he has since been promoted.
Because this is where they buy the politicians. Because this is where power has its seat. Because 99% of us are suffering at the mercy of the madmen on this street. Because all of us are victims of class warfare being waged on us by the 1%. Because these greedy banksters rob the country, leaving us without the means to pay the rent. Because the last time that we had a decent government was about 1932. Because we the people are supposed to run this country, but instead it's all run by and for the few. Because now we know the rich do not pay taxes, but when they need a hand, it's us who bail them out. Because we suspected we lived in a plutocracy, but suddenly of late there is no doubt. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here. Because both my parents lost their savings. Because I have never opened an account. Because the interest on my credit card just doubled, and now I can't pay the minimum amount. Because these budget cuts are just immoral, but our schools as overcrowded as they are. Because there are no buses where I live, but I can't afford to drive a car. Because so many of us don't have health insurance, the rest of us have it, but it sucks. Because the rich are flying in their private jets, while the rest of us are slogging through the muck. Because capitalism isn't working, this system has just failed to produce. Because the 1% are prospering, while the rest of us just suffer their abuse. So we're gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here. Because it has been demonstrated amply that the winners are the ones who stick around. Because this world should belong to everyone, not just the banksters who had smashed it to the ground. Because we've noticed voting doesn't change things when the politicians are mostly millionaires. Because we're learning how to stand up like Tunisians, like they did in Tahrir Square. Where a young man named Mohammed Bouazizi struck a match that lit up all the earth. And all around the world the spell was broken, and a movement for the future was in birth. Because there's only so much the rich can feed us before we figure out which side we're on. Because we've learned if we want our liberation, it will only come if we stay here till the rising of the dawn. So we're
gonna stay right here. We're gonna stay right here. Because corporations are not people, and we can't just let them choose. Because if we leave our fate to them, then all of us will surely lose. Because the